Hello and welcome to The Big Interview, brought to you by the V2 Sport Network. I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me for this show, we've got returning guest, Justin Whalley.
Anthony, thanks for having me on.
No problem. So we had Justin on about a year ago when he here to try and raise some funds for his team, Matabele Land, who competed in the CONIFA World Cup, which was last summer. So first of all, your team made it there. You managed to get the funding sorted and everything, I saw.
Yeah, it was hard work. But there were times when we didn't. It didn't look like we were going to do it, but we kept slogging away. We believed we could do it in the end, and very very grateful to hundreds, if not thousands, of people really who helped us in some shape or form and got us on the plane.
Amongst the team, Bruce Grobbelaar, I saw, was listed. 60 years old at the time, wasn't he? And he played in goal.
Yeah, well, he played in goal. He played in the tournament, but it was actually in a friendly match that he played. There was one of the games got cancelled, and it got filled with a friendly, but against the CONIFA member. And Bruce, yeah, he started that game. Played a good 20 minutes, kept a clean sheet till he got injured. So he made his return. I was thinking about giving him, sort of 5 minutes at the end of one of the World Cup games, but it just ended up being that game at the time, and he obviously couldn't play in the last game then because he was injured.
It must have been a bit of a shame. I did read about that. One of the teams pulled out pulling out over like a protest because of an unregistered player. Must have been a bit of a shame for you that you ended up playing, as you put it, friendly rather than as a the team you were supposed to play.
Yeah, it would have been Isle of Man Tibet, I think. It would have been the winner of that game. It would have been a placement game because that's how it works with CONIFA. So if you get knocked out in the first round, you continue playing and you play for places. So it was disappointing, but on the other side of things, it actually allowed me to play everyone that we took to London. Everybody got a game, even the coaching staff. So it was one of those. It had a lot of pluses to it as well in the end.
Did you think about stepping on the pitch yourself?
Well, I did, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
I got myself the last. I played the last 9 minutes. All the coaches played. So Bruce played, Matt, who was also one of our goalkeeper coaches, who's a very, very talented goalkeeper from the States, actually. He probably would be the best goalkeeper at that tournament at standalone. But he had a game, and Bissani and Kanye, who were coaching with me, they played. All the lads who hadn't had a game to there also got on, and we went 1-0 up fairly late on, and I thought, I'll get myself on here for 10 minutes, make my international debut. I suppose that's... I don't think I'm going to get that chance again, so...
No.
Fantastic.
What position did you play?
I played as a forward. It got a bit messy by then. We'd lost a bit of our structure. But I just ran around up front trying to pull their defenders out of position, really, to create a bit of space, but... It was amazing to be on the pitch and in the same team as Bruce Grobbelaar, if you like. And if you'd predicted that a few years ago, I couldn't have imagined that such a thing was possible. But yeah, it was a fantastic experience.
That's fantastic.
So
your side finished 13th out of the 16 and won two games out of the five. I suppose that's not too bad a record considering you weren't even sure if you'd make it to the CONIFA World Cup.
Well, we'd never played teams at that level, and we went in and we played the European champions in the very first game. We did all right, and then we had a bad period where we conceded a few goals, and the floodgates really it could have got really horrible. simple, but the lads got their heads together, and we scored a goal ourselves in that game, and could have had a couple more. And then in the second game, we played another very good team, Jekyllland, and I felt we bossed that for the first 25 minutes until our keeper got sent off, and then it was a bit too much for the lads after that. And I think we learned from that, and after that we managed to beat Tuvalu, so we beat a country. Mm. We lost the game against Kabylie, we drew, but it went to penalties, which we lost. But on the pitch we didn't lose that. And in the last game, Tamil Eelam, we beat them as well. So I'd say, at the end of the day, we've lost two games, and that's two teams that ended up in the semi-finals. One of whom we gave a good game for the first 30 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. So I think overall very, very good, And I think if you count the friendly match that we played during the tournaments against Dagos Islands as well, to say that we played six games in London when we won three and drew one, it's fantastic stuff from the lads.
Yeah, for sure. And I had a look through some of the other squads that were there and that, and there's quite a few players who play across Europe as well. I think one plays in plays for Bates in Russia, and just generally across the Swiss League and Irish League and a few other leagues. I noticed there's quite a few who play professionally in Europe for European sides, which you didn't have.
Well, if you take Padania, we played in the first game, they had Stankovic playing for them. He used to play for Lazio gone for 100 caps for Lithuania in his career. And they had a lot of Serie C, Serie D boys. Mm. Third, fourth tier Italian players, they're obviously no mucks. And Jekyllland that we played, they had boys that I think they play in the Romanian, Hungarian second tier. And some of them have had games in the top tier. So, some very good players. And a couple of players have played international level at FIFA level as well. So, I think the boys have got to be really proud of themselves to step up, to come off the pitches in Zimbabwe and put in those performances is amazing. And you just wonder if we could have had better preparation in terms of pitches and getting the boots earlier and playing a few friendlies against high level opposition. Mm. How much better we could possibly have done.
Mm-hmm. There were a few things which were the tournament as a whole got decent promotion. I saw Paddy Power got involved. They streamed some of the games on Facebook, which it certainly helped. And I saw they also introduced the green card, which was for descent or diving, which was similar to it was a card where the player immediately had to be substituted off and replaced with another player. Do you think that's something we might see? Did you think it was a good addition to the tournament?
Well, Connie, for executive committee meetings, going back, because I'm part of the executive committee of CONIFA as well. Mm. And going back, I think about 6 or 9 months before, I said, I think it was, we had an opportunity with the tournament to be looking at introducing or trying out things that people have, got an interest in trying. And I myself mentioned that we should look at, not necessarily the colour green, but introducing a card of that nature, that almost like a sin bin card, just as a tryout. Mm. Around the same time, Paddy Power came to us and said that they were looking into doing something like that as well. And I think it was a great thing to try out. I don't think there were too many in the tournament. I know the first one was done by the Matabeleland referee, but I can't remember how many, if there were more than two or three in the tournament. But I think it's a good idea. I think it makes players think. It doesn't ruin the game, perhaps, but it punishes a player. Mm. So I think it's something that's worth considering going forward. I don't know what popular it would be, but it's worth trying out in perhaps an under 21 tournament or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I guess perhaps there were only two or three because players were aware of that and were maybe not play acting or any of that, and you know, those sort of things are things in general we want to see out of the game. So yeah, I think it's a really good idea myself, and yeah, exactly as you say, it'd be quite interesting to see it in a youth tournament.
I think with the diving, it would be great, wouldn't it? So lad does the dive in the penalty area and he's straight off of the green. It would stamp down on that a little bit.
Yeah. Mark Clattenburg refereed the final and other games throughout the tournament. I saw he liked the idea of the green card. He said that the worst player in the Premier League for the time wasting is Ben Foster, the Watford goalkeeper now. He used to be at West Brom. So yeah.
Yeah, why not? Try it out. It certainly wasn't, I don't think it was a negative thing in our tournament.
Mm-hmm.
They try out the VAR and the goal line technology, and I think it's something that they should look at trying in one tournament to see whether it can work.
So the team that won the tournament, Carpat Alger, I don't know if I've pronounced that right, I hope that's somewhere near.
Carpatalia.
They're represented by a Hungarian minority in near Western Ukraine. I presume they were a good side.
They were a good side. They came in because one of the teams couldn't play at the tournament, so they came in as a last minute replacement. And a bit like Denmark, if you remember when Denmark won the Euros in '92, they came in, didn't they? I think it was the Yugoslavia. I think it was that got withdrawn and won that tournament. I think Italia did a similar thing. They came with a really small squad, actually, so that made it an even bigger achievement because they didn't have too many other lads to call upon. And you know, when you're playing six games in 10 days, it's hard work.
Yeah.
It's really hard work to get the recovery in the players. I mean, we got halfway through the tournament and just pulled our training sessions because we just needed the lads to rest, really. And we did our training sessions just with a blackboard, really. We couldn't expect the lads to do too much more than the stretch outside. So yeah, Carpatalia did amazing. I think they had some. We didn't play them, so I didn't have a look too much at them. I actually didn't see them play apart from the final, but I believe they had some very good players with them.
Mm-hmm. And like yourselves, it was their first CONIFA tournament. I know there's been three in total, but yeah, for your players, it must have been a huge thing like an honour to go out and play for their team, you know, at such a stage.
Yeah, I mean the boys are still. I think it's still sinking in for some of them. I mean, I'm in touch with a few of them, and they message me from time to time, or I see their social media, and they're still posting photos this very week of themselves playing at tournaments and out in London as a team when we went out a couple of times to have a look at the sites. And I think that is it. I hope it's not a once in a lifetime for them. I hope that most of those lads will be involved in future tournaments. But I know when in the build up they worked. Yeah, because we ran it like a club side, so we were with the lads 5-6 days a week a lot of the time. And I think, you know, they obviously doubted whether we'd actually ever make it to London for economic, political reasons, what have you, logistical reasons. But we made it there, and I think it's life changing, hopefully, for most of them, and it will make them it'll allow them to dream. Because, you know, they dreamt of being there, and there they were out the pitch of the first game at Sutton playing against the, you know, a couple of lads that played in the Serie A before. So,
and you're no longer the manager there. What do you think the future holds for them?
I think they've got Bissani and Kane running the show there still, so there's a continuity. Those lads brought me in. There was a plan in place to introduce a women's team, and there was a plan in place to introduce this, what we call the Human Rights Cup. And both those things happened. So they had the Human Rights Cup in Johannesburg in December, and they travelled there with the men's team and the new ladies team and played. They bought out a new kit again. They've got a European tour that they're hoping to do, which mostly takes place in England, I think, this summer. And they're very serious about qualifying for the next CONIFA World Cup, being there, and you know, going further next time. And I believe they will. I really do. And I think, well, in Zimbabwe, people are going to people didn't take us that seriously, truth be known, in Zimbabwe.
Mm.
So I think we felt like we were always up against it. And now, obviously, people do take them seriously. So I think they'll attract better players as well for future tournaments, as well as the, you know, the core of the team that they've got now. So, yeah, you know, I'd make a prediction that they will end up winning one of the CONIFA World Cups down the road, especially if it's played in Africa, mm-hmm. which would favour them, you know.
Well, it's every 2 years, isn't it? And I think the next one's it's not decided where it's to be held, but they've said it outside of Europe.
Well, it's provisionally it's been announced, and subject to a couple of things, it's going to be in Somaliland.
Okay.
So the year after, June 2020. So that will really suit the Matabililand lads if they qualify. Mm-hmm. It's going to be hot. It's going to be a tough environment, and I could see them, if they go there with a well-drilled squad, which I'd expect from Bisani. Mm. I think they could be challenging for that.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about all these experiences you had in getting the team to the CONIFA World Cup. I know you've released a book recently, One Football, No Nets. How did you decide to write a book? Were you planning on writing it when you started, or did it come later?
What happened with myself with that is that I do keep diaries, let's say travel diaries. So I've done a lot of travelling in my life, and it goes back to probably 97 time. I did travel diaries from then onwards, and so it was no different with this. As soon as I went to Zimbabwe, I kept a daily diary for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I find it helps me as well. You don't do it thinking you're necessarily ever going to get something published, but it helps me with my own thoughts and understanding where I'm at in life. And I think as things developed in Zimbabwe economically, politically, when Mugabe was ousted and the various things that were going on, I suddenly started thinking, well, there's a story here to be told. So as soon as the tournament ended, I'm looking at what I'm going to do next, and I thought I'm going to contact some publishers to see if there's any interest in me doing something. As I said, I've been writing for 20 years, so I've got my own writing style. It's I think that's developed, and two or three publishers were straight back interested, which you don't expect, because you usually you email publishers, you never hear back.
Mm.
Then we had a chat. I was really impressed with Benny and Kearney, who I ended up going with. They really wanted me to produce my own book. There was going to be no ghostwriting. I'd have a lot of control, well, most of the control of what went into the book. So, yeah, made an agreement with them, and but then they wanted me to turn it around really quickly, get it out before Christmas. So it was then I took it on full time, and I went back to Russia, where I'd been in the summer for the World Cup. I went back there, used the visa I had, and based myself down in Abkhazia, and spent 5 weeks, just 7 days a week, really, just banging out the book, getting it done. I managed to turn it round and get it out. I was about a week late, but got it out at the end of November, beginning of December. So really tough, really tough.
That's great. It's interesting, because I spoke to a guy called Seth Burkett, who released a book called The Boy in Brazil, and he said something similar to yourself, that he kept diaries when he was out there and sort of ended up turning all of those experiences into a book. So, yeah, no, that's Interesting. What exactly does the book cover then, the Matabele Lands of the CONIFA World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, that's the core of the book, but the book actually starts off with, because, you know, the most common question I get is, how the hell did you end up being, you know, an international manager in Zimbabwe?
So, yeah.
Really, the book's, yeah, it's a bit of an odd story in itself. So the book just starts off with, you know, where the idea came for wanting to do something like that, and how I got to the point of going out to Zimbabwe. Then it's the first part, my first 3 months out there. At that point, I went back to Europe to fundraise for 2 or 3 months, and to bring in Bruce Grobbelaar, and to bring in staff to work with us in London and various things, and get the kit deal and stuff. So it's, there's a section about that, and I go back to Zimbabwe, and then, you know, it's the preparation going into the tournament, and it's the final crazy fundraising, and trying to get the visas, and thinking we weren't going to go, and thinking we were going to go, and thinking we weren't going to go, that went on, and then there's a section on the CONIFA World Cup where I go through, yeah, basically a lot of detail about our games and what's going on behind the scenes with the team, and then there's an epilogue which is me going to the Russian World Cup, because that was quite an interesting experience in itself, with quite some strange things went on there. At least of all, I think England ended up in the semi-final of the World Cup in Moscow.
Yeah. Have you got any stories to tell us from the World Cup, or would you like to, or would you prefer to save them for those who read your book?
From the CONIFA or from the FIFA?
From the Russia, from FIFA.
Well, the Russia World Cup, I think people were just expecting it to be a nightmare, and to be violent out there, and to be a place not you wouldn't want to be, but it was quite the opposite. So what happened with me was I went out there thinking I'd be out there for about a week, and I got there, and it was such a great atmosphere. I just thought, I'll roll with this and see where it takes me. And I got involved in all this. I was doing some social media, and it went viral. And then next thing was, I was getting contacted by Russian media, and I ended up in this quite surreal situation. I was in a big press conference in Kazan, and during that, I was offered the opportunity to be the brand manager of Tatarstan. they had the hat on, the local hat that they wear in Tatarstan, and I had a room absolutely full of media. There was about 5 TV cameras in there, and about, I don't know, 15, 20 journalists. It's so surreal. And just wondered, wondering how my life had reached that point, because really I'd gone to Russia for a quiet time. but it was great fun, and as I say, just rolled with it. I didn't have only had tickets for one game before I went out there, but I ended up going to about 6 games. Managed to pick tickets up in quite interesting situations. I managed to get into 2 of the England games for free. You know, sleeping in funny places, and I mean, after the quarter final, I didn't have anywhere to sleep. I just spent the night out. Ended up in a train station, sleeping on a bench in there after being out in the park in the Samara all night, and into the clubs and stuff. So it was really good fun. The thing I liked about it is you didn't know from one day to the next what the heck was going to happen next, really.
Well, if anyone wants to purchase your book, it's One Football No Net, so I'll put the link in the description. And also, I'll mention at this point the previous show, which you did with us last year, which sort of, I guess, touches on some of the stuff with Matabele Land and getting them to the World Cup. I'll put that link in the description as well if you want to listen back to that. I want to ask about yourself and what your plans for the future are. I saw you mentioned on Twitter you're going to the Copa America.
Yeah, I've been to I went to the Argentina Copa America in 2011. It was quite interesting because there was barely any foreigners down there from outside of South America, really. barely any journalists and certainly almost no fans. Then I went again 2015 for Chile, and it was quite a noticeable change. There was a lot more people got an interest in the tournament. And I'm not surprised, because it's the calibre of the players there is unbelievable. You know, you look at teams like Argentina, Chile, and Brazil, for example, just some absolutely fantastic players. And I mean, the 2015 Copa, where Chile won, what a team that was. Mm. With players like Sanchez just at the top of their game at the time. And it's I love the tournament, because the fans are very real. I like the South Americans. They're very good value. And some great stadiums, and you get to travel around South America to some interesting countries. So I didn't go to the Brazil World Cup because I had commitments with the football team I was running at the time, and I promised myself I'd try to go when the Copa America was on. So that's the plan. I'm heading out the end of April, travel a bit around Brazil, and then hopefully cover the Copa America for some media. Help pay some of the beer money, I hope.
Sounds good. Have you got any plans beyond that? I mean, do you want to go back into coaching or managing, or, you know, are you interested in writing or media, or any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely at the stage where I'm thinking that I'll go and do the Brazil thing. I've got a bit of time now to promote the book. I want to see how far the book goes. If the book does well, then I'd love the opportunity to do a second book, but that might be in combination with taking on a new project. It would be lovely to do a new Matabili Land type project, and also know that I had a book to be written, because I know I'd have a bit of guaranteed finance, because, you know, those kinds of roles are generally voluntary. I'm already talking to one or two teams, so I won't mention who at the moment, about possibly getting involved with them August, September time. So yeah, I'll get back from Brazil, see my family, and then I might be looking at going somewhere weird and wonderful.
You're talking national teams, sorry.
Something it could well be another CONIFA team with the 2020 World Cup as a target for the following summer.
Yeah.
If it's not that, then it could be a team just that's a bit outside of that. It's a bit off that wouldn't be necessarily playing in CONIFA, but needs the development. Needs help with the development. That's the target at the moment. So quite excited about the possibility. I've got my energy back again. I'm sort of ready for for taking something like that up again, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, best of luck with that. I just want to finish by asking you a few questions, just talking a bit about the English football. I know you're a Northampton Town fan. The season started off quite poorly. Dean Austin got sacked because he only won one game in the first 10. Keith Curl's come in, and there's been a bit of improvement since.
We had Jimmy Floyd at Hasselbank as well. That didn't work out. I was kind of surprised. I thought Hasselbank was, because I like the way he conducts himself and how he talks, but that didn't work at all. And Keith's come in. He's had a fair bit of criticism because people think he's tinkering a little bit too much with the team. But I understand as well that the manager comes in and he inherits a lot of players who he doesn't know too much about, and they're not necessarily his kind of players. So I think he's been chopping and changing and playing lads in different positions to see what's possible. But I went on Saturday. We played Lincoln away, and we got a very credible draw there. 10,000 at the game. I know they went down to 10 men, but they only had 4 shots on goal, and the lads put in a real shift, and they won away at Tranmere earlier in the week. So I'm hoping they've turned the corner a little bit. Still not guaranteed safety. Hopefully they'll push on now, and in the next couple of weeks make sure that we're safe. Mm. And I think Keith can then start looking to build what he wants to do next season. Mm-hmm. But it's you know, ever since Chris Wilder left, it's been a little bit of a downward spiral, because we were in a very good place at that point, and I think it's sadly we've been on this downward spiral, and I hope we can just start turning the corner a bit now.
Fingers crossed. I know Chris Wilder's working miracles over at Sheffield United. I watched them. They drew 3-3 with Villa on Friday night, but they look a decent, you know, I wouldn't say nailed on or anything, but they look a decent bet to be promoted into the Premier League.
Well, I think I mentioned it in the book. I went to see Chris up at Sheffield. He's for me personally, he's someone I look up to as a coach. He's someone I greatly respect, and I was lucky enough to spend half a day up at Sheffield United. You look at what Chris has done going back to the Halifax days and then Oxford, Northampton, with limited resources and money, he built some absolutely fantastic teams. Mm. He's gone to Sheffield, which is you know, his club. It's where he's from. He's played for them in the past. That's his heart. He's got in the team, and he's, you know, the season after he had Northampton champions on 99 points, and then he takes Sheffield United up on 100 points. Mm. They're knocking on the door of the playoffs last season, just drew too many games. And then this season, yeah, they've pushed on, and they're looking like they could be promoted. And I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Chris will be fuming about that game with Villa, obviously. Yeah. No excuses for throwing away a 3-0 lead. But I think on the whole they've had a fantastic season, and you got Billy Sharp there. He's phenomenal, isn't he, with his goals. So I look out for their results all the time now, because I want to see Chris do well, continue to do well, and take them up. And I also have a lot of respect for that club. I think Sheffield United is a very decent club with a lot of history and culture to it.
Mm. And just one other thing with Northampton, though, there's a story about a hashtag United player, Scott Pollock, who's made his debut this year. For those of you that don't know, hashtag United is a YouTube-based team. They're competing in the football pyramid for the first time this year as well, I think, in the East Counties League or something like that. But it's quite interesting, the story behind that.
I don't know too much. I've noticed that in the last few days. I didn't see too much of Northampton at the start of the season because I was away in Russia. I didn't follow that whole story, but I'm aware of him coming in. And hashtag United, you know, that's a huge project. They've got a massive following, haven't they? And they actually played Barrow, I think, one of the Conifer teams in the lead up to the Conifer World Cup was a friendly. I can tell you as well, we were having conversations about potentially playing them ourselves, but it just wasn't doable at the time. Mm. I wasn't sure that I wanted to do it, because I thought, you know, if things went badly in terms of how we played, that wouldn't look too good for us. We'd get publicity, but we didn't do it. But that's an interesting project. I was sceptical of what hashtag United were doing there at the start, but it's really developing now, isn't it? For the lad to come in to Northampton, it's really impressive.
Mm-hmm. And I've got to ask you about the Premier League, Liverpool or City for the title, or Spurs even.
Yeah, I felt all along it's probably going to be City. I think Liverpool are absolutely fantastic to watch, and I prefer them out of choice. I prefer them as a club to win it. But I think Liverpool have got a few issues there. Defensively, they were fantastic. There seems to be a few flaws setting in there. I think the Palace game, the 4-3, wasn't it? They were a bit all over the place at times. I just think overall City are just going to edge it. And I think Spurs are going to be close by again, like they have been the last couple of seasons. I don't think they'll necessarily push past either of those two. But I'd put my money on Man City if I had to, I think, at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think for Tottenham though to be competing with those two is a really impressive thing in itself. The job Pochettino's done there is incredible.
Well, it is, and he's obviously lost a couple of key men as well. So you wonder if both those players have been around, where you know how much closer Tottenham would be to it. And they had a little bit of a patch there with a couple of bad games. So you know they could have been there much tighter than they are currently. He's obviously a fantastic manager. It's funny, isn't it, as well, because they've got Man United suddenly breathing down their next Spurs a little bit further back, so they won't want this run to continue and Man United somehow catch them up or something crazy. So it's great to have. It's great. It's not just one team running away with it, and you've still got three teams in it at this stage, I think.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible the run of form that Man United have been on since Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's took over. Do you think he's put himself in a position where they'll sort of have to give him the job in the summer?
I don't see if they were going to make a decision fairly soon. I don't see how they can't give it to him, because what can you say? If the manager's won 10 and drawn 1 out of 11 games, or whatever it is, it's very difficult to turn around and say that he shouldn't have the job. Clearly, there's the atmosphere of the club's completely changed. There's a positivity to it. At the same time, of course, the expectations that he's brought in there, he can't continue at that level. He won't be winning every game. So I guess when the honeymoon's over, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction is. But I think at this point it's very difficult to justify bringing in a bigger name manager if Solskjaer's record is continues like it has been. He deserves the job, doesn't he?
I think so myself. To be honest, I'm just much happier that Mourinho is no longer there myself. So anything that's seeing a bit of positivity following him, I think.
Yeah, I think Mourinho was just, there was a horrible negativity to it all as it went on, and that doesn't matter how talented you might be with your technical coaching. I think that's just, people don't want to play for you. The supporters don't believe in you. They don't feel it. So it wasn't a nice thing to see, really. Unless you're somebody who hates Man United and you found it mildly amusing, of course. But I think Solskjaer's just brought in a very natural, easygoing atmosphere there. So well done to him.
And just finally, I know Khenifa's been mentioned quite a few times with the Khenifa World Cup and all. Have you got any thoughts on FIFA? Because Infantino looks highly likely to win. I think he's basically guaranteed to win another term as boss. Do you think it's an improving organisation, or do you think it's still a corrupt place?
FIFA, there's been issues with that organisation since forever, really. There's a lot of things that are clearly not right with it. There's clearly a lot of corruption there, and I don't see that that's particularly going to change. In terms of FIFA, I mean, we don't compete with FIFA. We have teams that are outside of FIFA. I would ask FIFA why a couple of our members, which are countries like Tuvalu and Kiribati, are not being taken in by this Serbi rich organisation, and not given the full membership of FIFA that they deserve. If we are talking about comparisons with Connie and FIFA, there's silly money, isn't there, in football? And clearly a lot of it goes missing, and it goes into certain pockets, whoever they may be. But you'd hope. Football can be used as such a positive impact and positive change in the world, and you hope that the right kind of people are in FIFA and see that and help develop not just the big leagues and the big clubs, but football all the way down, really. But sometimes I'm a bit dubious about that aspect of things. I think it's just the interest is in the big money, isn't it, largely.
Yeah, I think to end the show there, to say that football can be such a force for good in the world and a positive in the world is a great way to end the show.
Oh, absolutely, and I think you know, at the end of the day, it's most people who play football, you never get anywhere in life. You play for joy, you play for pleasure, you play for camaraderie, friendship, and you play to make new friendships. You know, we can get on a plane and go anywhere in the world, and we can start talking about football to a stranger in a bar, on a train, and that's the magic of the game. And I think it's a shame when people forget that it ultimately is a force for good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for joining me. You can follow Justin on Twitter at JustinWally10. Follow us at V2 Sport Network and myself at @Ant_Kendrick. I'll put all the links in the description. As well as that, you check out Justin's book, One Football, No Nets. Again, I'll put a link to that in the description. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on, and thank you for listening to the podcast. It's goodbye from me and goodbye from Justin.